Hi, this is Anthony Pascal, founder of TrekMovie.com.
And this is Lori Elster, managing editor of TrekMovie.com.
And this is All Access Star Trek, the brand new TrekMovie.com podcast all about the growing Star Trek universe on television.
Hey.
If you have been a subscriber to ShuttlePod, you'll now notice that you are a subscriber to the TrekMovie.com podcast network, which includes
Congratulations, everybody.
So now we have two podcasts. For this episode of All Access Star Trek, we're going to do what we do every week, which is start with a brief discussion of the news from the Star Trek universe. Then, as we will for the next 23 weeks, we will review the latest new episode. And this is also a special week in that I just had a chat with Lower Decks creator Mike McMahon, and we're going to include some of those clips.
And then when we talk about the news, which we need to do.
Well, the biggest news is the launch of Star Trek Lower Decks, obviously. There's some Lower Decks news as well. Maybe the biggest thing is that Mike McMahon has confirmed something he'd hinted at before, which is we are going to see some, what he's calling, legacy actor cameos in the first season. So, Lori, what characters do you want to see show up on Lower Decks?
So I was thinking about this because it's, I mean, the big characters are one thing, but there are some smaller characters that I've always wanted to see more about. And I feel like this would be a great way to do it. I mean, my number one is sort of, I'd love to see Dr. Pulaski make another appearance because we have no idea what she's up to. I'd actually like to see that she and Dr. Crusher are pals. That would make me happy. But my biggest one that I always wanted to know what happened to her was Marasta Yale, who was actually in the First Contact episode of Next Generation and then went to live on the Enterprise and go somewhere. And I never found out what happened to her. And I'm dying to know. And I always think about Mr. Home. And I wonder, I'd love to see him just show up so briefly. It would be so fun just to see him and hear him for, well, you don't hear him, he doesn't talk.
He's a very calming presence.
He is indeed. So those are my big ones.
Another little bit of news, if you're a fan of Star Trek and you are outside the U.S. and Canada, you may be wondering, hey, where's my Lower Decks? Because of COVID, CBS had to juggle their schedule a little bit, and it turns out that Plan A was for Discovery to go first and then do Lower Decks, but then they flipped that around for obvious reasons with Discovery post-production. So Lower Decks is showing up earlier than they had planned, and the announcement of a international streaming partner is not ready yet, but what we're hearing, that announcement should be coming soon.
What else is going on?
Well, there's a little bit of news regarding the future of All Access. There's a lot of new content. There's all these kind of sub-channels within All Access. The Viacom merger is really now flowing into All Access, and you're seeing these channels for, Nickelodeon and MTV, et cetera. So, RuPaul Drag Race and every episode of SpongeBob. There's just a ton of stuff on All Access. The plan is to keep expanding and rebrand and relaunch All Access next year with even more content to really take on HBO Max, etc. One element that ties into Star Trek for all this is that Nickelodeon is obviously part of this, and you can see Nickelodeon shows on there, and there's going to be a new SpongeBob show that'll be an All Access exclusive. However, when Star Trek Prodigy premieres on Nickelodeon, the new CG kids show in 2021, it looks like the way CBS, Viacom CBS is going to handle their cable shows is they will not immediately show up on this new All Access, that they'll be on MTV and Nickelodeon, and then sometime later they'll end up, maybe even a year later. So if you want to watch Prodigy, you're going to need to have Nickelodeon in 2021.
Interesting.
Maybe a bit more important news is the same executive in this recent interview talked about Star Trek Picard for season 2, and he put a date on it saying he expects the second season of Star Trek Picard to drop in 2021.
Oh.
That shows a kind of a level of confidence that...
I was going to say optimism.
Exactly. Now, Picard is shot here in L.A., and I'm hearing from people who work on some other shows that they're still hoping things can go into production by the end of the year here in LA, and that all these details can be worked out with the Screen Actors Guild and the Directors Guild, et cetera, so that everyone is safe and that they can do productions this year. Viacom, it feels, is optimistic that that could happen as well, because there's no way Picard shows up in 2021 unless they start shooting by the end of this year.
Right.
The other shows, Discovery, if there's a season 4, and Strange New Worlds, would be shot in Canada. Those shows are further behind. I mean, season 4 hasn't even been announced yet for Discovery, and Strange New Worlds, you know, they aren't ready to start shooting. They don't have scripts completed. But Lori, what are you hearing from your friends in Canada about the state of production in Canada?
Yeah, I have a good friend. He used to be my roommate, actually, and he works at Lock and Key. He's doing season 2 now. And he said he feels 100% safe with everything that they've set up. Like, he feels very confident and he's not worried about it. So he said everyone is in PPE all the time. He said they have lots of it. He said Netflix has access to tons of it and they can get it from local suppliers. So basically, when they're not actually filming, everybody's covered in it. The actors will take theirs off when they're on set. Everyone will have had tests. But he said, basically, it's plexiglass barriers, it's PPE, they're cleaning like crazy. I mean, Toronto doesn't have the same numbers that we've had here in terms of cases of COVID. But I think that they are going to be well underway to doing successful productions, and they will look like real people will be able to talk and interact and be close to each other. So that's not going to be a problem. The big problem right now is getting American people over the border, because there's a mandatory 14-day quarantine if you can get over. And here's the crazy part. The fine if you break quarantine in Canada is $750,000.
That's a lot to pay. I mean, the doing a show in Canada for, you know, an American studio is going to cost a little extra if they want to bring in Americans because of all these issues. So I think we're going to be seeing, for all shows, more Canadian actors as guest stars.
First of all, there are plenty of Canadian actors, and Discovery's already made very good use of that.
The irony is that the Canadians will probably be ready to start shooting before the Americans, but the American show, being Picard, is probably going to be ahead of the game when it comes to having the season written before either Strange New World season 1 or Discovery season 4, if that gets a green light. I wouldn't expect either of those Canadian shows to show up on All Access or the new All Access until 2022.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
The second season of Lower Decks is already in production, so that can probably show up on All Access in 2021. Maybe they'll come up with some short treks as well.
Right, but it would probably be a smart thing to do if they know they're not going to have shows ready.
There's a little bit of Discovery news. The showrunner Michelle Paradise tweeted out that they have started working on post-production for the finale. So they should be ready to get that show going on October 15th with season premiere of season 3.
I also saw Twitter was abuzz with everybody looking at the new Starfleet badge because they released some new promo images, or one new promo image of Michael Burnham.
It's at an angle. It's a little fuzzy, but it's clearly a new badge. It's Michael Burnham with the long hair and the new badge, because we've seen pictures of her with the longer hair and the old badge. So at some point after the time jump, she also gets a new badge. And we've seen some other characters with this new badge. So some point in season 3, there's a new badge. I think it's a little easier to tell the ranks on. People are saying it looks a little bit like the Bajoran badges because it's an oval shape. So, you know, it's a fun, nerdy thing to look at. We did a tweet about it, but there's not a lot to talk about with Discovery. So this week, it's all about badges.
Although you did do an interview with David Benjamin Tomlinson, who plays Linus. How did that go?
That was great. He was such a delight. Linus is back in season 3. He's very careful about spoilers, but he says, you know, we're going to learn more about Linus in season 3. He's put a lot of work into developing the character because he takes it very seriously that he's the most prominent Saurian ever in Star Trek, which is true. There was like a background character once, but Linus is really, you know, the first talking Saurian we've ever seen.
All right. I feel like it's time to start talking about Lower Decks.
Indeed. Now, the first episode of Lower Decks is called Second Contact. It was written by the show creator, Mike McMahon, and it introduces us to the show and the premise, which is a ship that focuses on Second Contacts, which is, you know, itself funny.
Yeah, totally.
The opening teaser, I thought, does a really good job in very less than 2 minutes of really explaining what the show is and showing the humor of the show, because it, you know, the whole way it starts off with the captain's log, but it turns out that it's that one of these four ensigns doing a fantasy captain's log, getting totally busted for it by Mariner, who's kind of the Kirk of our show.
Yeah, she's absolutely the star of the show. And I thought that open, even before we got to the actual theme song and open, they set up our first two characters. They set up their relationship. They start starting with Captain's Log, and then we find out that it's just this lowly guy who's practicing. It was just a beautiful setup.
It turned all these tropes on the side, but it wasn't making fun of Star Trek, and it was just kind of having fun with Star Trek. And then we quickly meet the other two characters. We meet Tendi and Rutherford, and they use this structure of giving Tendi a tour of the ship, and she's kind of our point of view character as we learn more about the ship and we learn more about these characters. And I feel that this first third was so solid in really giving us a sense of these four lower deckers. In just a short period, I kind of feel like I know who they are and I like them.
I totally agree. I found all the characters really compelling. Each of these four has something different to offer that's basically in terms of point of view, which we're going to need because that's what's going to make each story even better. And the fact that, you know, I'll be honest, I'm not a big Rick and Morty fan, and I had some concerns that there was going to be sort of humor at the expense of story or character. And none of that is true. And I love, like, Tendi's so excited and so positive. And in fact, in general, they are, except Mariner, who's got a whole other reason for her attitude. And I actually love her too. So I think they did just, they're very fleshed out, real characters, and their love of what they're doing makes it very Starfleet and very Star Trek. And yet the rapid fire, you know, jokes and moments and references, it keeps the pace up, and it's very, very entertaining as you go and very funny.
That's all true. And I do feel like they all feel like Star Trek ensigns. They're not all super heroic, but they feel young and they have room to grow. They have some quirks and foibles. You know, Mariner is obviously, as she will let everyone around her know, very complicated.
Yeah, which she says, which is great. I love that little exchange because Boimler says to her, for somebody who hates rank, you sure seem to bring it up a lot. And she says, yes, I'm very complicated. Thank you. Which is true. And she's very, you feel very invested in all four of them, but I definitely feel especially invested in her.
Her bucking the rules and bucking of the system, which is absolutely true, doesn't mean she doesn't believe in Starfleet and the Federation. And I think the episode made that clear, especially when we get down to the planet, that she actually believes in it so much.
Yes.
Her breaking of the rules isn't selfish. You know, it isn't all about her. She'll break the rules to, you know, help these aliens for their second contact.
Which is why I think you said she's the Kirk.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a connection to that. That's something he used to do. And he would, and when he broke the rules, it was because he believed in the greater mission of Starfleet. And then the whole time they're playing off the whole idea of Next Generation, which is what inspired the episode Lower Decks in the first place, which is that the senior staff is always having all these meetings and very involved in everything. And you got to wonder what it's like for the rest of the people on the ship who aren't in those conference room meetings, who don't know what's going on. So they play off that theme keeps going throughout. I also think with these characters, like you mentioned, character growth, not only is there room for growth in all of them, we actually see character growth within the first episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with our Kirk and Spock, which is Mariner and Boimler.
Yes.
Both learn a lesson and grow a little bit during the episode. You know, you mentioned the senior officers. We don't get a lot in the first episode by design with them. Some of them feel a little one-dimensional at this point.
Which sort of speaks to the perspective of the junior officers looking at them too.
Right. You know, this isn't a criticism as much as it is an observation.
Right.
That, you know, like Shax, we really have no idea what's going on with him, except he's just super intense. Right. The Bajoran security officer. It's like,
yeah,
that guy really needs to chill out.
I love that guy already.
The captain is a very interesting character, and there was a bit of a surprise in the episode in that we find out not only is she captain of the ship, but she's Mariner's mother.
And doesn't want her on the ship, which is funny.
Right.
She's frustrated with her behavior, and so she doesn't want her on the ship. And then it turns out that Mariner's father, who's an admiral, is the one who's making it happen. And doesn't want to talk about it very much either.
So this adds a whole new dimension to the show and to these characters and to their dynamic is, you know, that this is a, you know, both a workplace and a family show. And,
yeah,
you know, we learn a little bit about the doctor, Dr. Tana, who's a Cajun.
Who's very funny.
Yeah. One of the, yeah, definitely, there's a lot of humor that can be drawn. She's got a bit of an alley cat persona. The scenes I felt in the sick bay were pretty hilarious with her. So that was a good introduction.
Yeah, I agree. And
the last upper decker, that may not be a term we want to continue using. The last senior officer is Commander Ransom, the first officer. And we do get a sense of him. He's kind of a parody of Riker.
Yeah, he's like a caricature. He's a caricature of Riker with a little bit of Kirk, which Riker had a little bit of Kirk in him too.
Right. There's a lot of swagger, you know. Mm-hmm. He's the kind of guy who would use finger guns, you know. I think he does in the episode. But he is trying to do his job. You know, we see him being, if you know, doing his job on the planet, making second contact. And so, you know, he definitely is Starfleet, but he's got an ego.
Yes. And, you know, he's not fully developed yet, but this is just the first episode and there's plenty of time.
Right. And, you know, obviously it fits the voice actor very well with Jerry O'Connell, who happens to be married to
Rebecca Romijn.
So we've got that kind of weird two first officers for Star Trek. We're living in the same house.
Yes.
They must have interesting conversations.
I'm sure they do.
All of these character moments between our four lower deckers is the focus of the show. So with, I think in this episode, the main A plot being this arc between Boimler and Mariner growing to trust each other.
Right. Like, it's funny that the B plot is that everybody on the crew on the ship has turned into flesh-eating zombies. It's a, you know, usually that would be the A plot, but in this case, it is not.
Right.
And it works.
And in a way, it would be, like, let's say this was a brand new hour-long drama Star Trek show, and the A plot was this. I would feel like it was a bit cliche. Yet here, I think in a way, that's the point, you know?
Yes, totally the premise. Right, that's the premise of the whole show.
Right. It's happening. I think this is best manifested with through a character we haven't talked a lot about, which is Rutherford, right? Who's the engineer, Ensign. And a cyborg still dealing with his new cybernetic implant.
Yes, it's new.
Right. So he is our point of view on the zombie infestation on the ship because it starts while he's on a date, right?
With a Trill, I believe, right?
Yes, Ensign Barnes. And yes. they don't skip a beat, right? So we're watching them on a date as this zombie infestation's happening around them, but yet they continue on their date. Almost like nothing's happening around them. They just kind of start dealing with the zombie infestation while they have this lovely date.
Right, and awkwardly brush hands and have all these moments together.
Right, and it stays that way. You know, they go for a walk on the hull, which is, you know, a little bit of Star Trek First Contact.
Yeah.
They talk about, you know, loving the monkeys.
Yeah. So again, just reinforces the theme beautifully. And the reason that their date doesn't work out in the end is so hilariously nerdy and has nothing to do with zombies.
Rutherford has no time for romance when there's a level 2 diagnostic to be done.
Yes, exactly.
So he has his priorities straight, much to the chagrin of Ensign Barnes.
Right. It's okay. I think it's all going to work out in the end, the way it's supposed to.
Tendi has her point of view as well, where she's seeing the epicenter in the sick bay, and we get to see that, you know, she's both good at her job, and just nothing phases her as well. Nothing can stop her enthusiasm. She's just so excited to be there that you could throw anything at Tendi, anything. And she's just, hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, she's like, I'm squeezing a heart. It's awesome. Yeah, she's, yeah.
So that while that's all happening down on the planet, that, you know, at first something, you know, seemingly kind of serious happening, which is Boimler has now been instructed by the captain to keep an eye on Mariner. He doesn't know why that the captain is her mother, and he just loves protocol, so he starts following her around.
Well, he also likes feeling important, and that makes him feel very important.
Right. I mean, the captain kind of manipulates his desire for command and promotion by getting him to spy on her daughter, which is a little, you know, some people
sneaky.
May... That's, yeah, it's a little sneaky. It's not exactly the finest tradition of Star Trek, but it is something a mom might do. What do you think?
Well, I'm a mom and I wouldn't, but yes, I know many moms in my town for sure who would. That's why I stay away from most of them.
So they have an exchange with the Gallardonians. He confronts her, and that's a lot of fun. Because what's interesting is Mariner could cite more regulations than Boimler.
Yes. She keeps revealing herself, because when she's fighting with him, she's revealing that she knows a lot of regulations. She's revealing that she's had a lot of experience and been a lot of places. So every time they fight, we learn a little bit more. And she definitely knows what she should and shouldn't be doing, and is just making the decisions herself.
Yeah, although she's a little overconfident. I mean, her whole plan... because on the planet we have this like spider creature, and it just starts going crazy, and they have to figure out a way to deal with it. And she has some crazy plan where it involves taking their clothes off, but, you know, the plan doesn't go well. Let's just say
no. But I love when it's got Boimler, and first of all, it has like this sort of pinky purple goo, which I thought was a bit of a nice tribute to the animated series, which was very pink and purple. So I thought that was a nice touch. But when they say she's just gumming on him to suckle out some moisture while the spider's basically gooing all over him. And then she calls out, think about the warp core, because she wants him to think happy thoughts.
Right.
So that whole scene I thought was great. It made me laugh. So fun. And then he comes out of it. He goes, my bones. When it finally spits him out. And she's like, don't worry, the doctor will wave a light over it. It'll be fine.
Which is a very, very Star Trek joke. Because that is basically what they do. So we don't know if this show is going to have catchphrases. But, you know, maybe my bones is... it won't be the first time, you know, he gets himself in a situation, probably.
Yeah. I love, and the pace of these lines was great. Everything was just fast, fast, And so you're enjoying one thing when the next thing comes up and the next thing comes up. It's not milking. Nothing's getting milked, which I like. It's like the way 30 Rock used to be, where they would just put in five. I mean, someone once clocked it, I think, at how many jokes they did per minute. And it was a crazy amount. So this show's definitely giving it a run for its money and very, very cleverly doing so.
Yeah, I almost feel like it's the old joke, too many notes from Amadeus. And were there too many jokes? Maybe, maybe not.
For me, no. The pace of the jokes I thought was great because they also didn't take away from what was actually happening. That's when I get mad at jokes, when I feel like there's a main story and now we're ignoring it. And I didn't feel like that was happening at all. And I also thought all the references that they kept throwing out, little throwback Star Trek references, I also enjoyed the pace and density of those. I did not think it was too much. I just thought it was a great, it was a really nice amount. I can always take more anyway, but I enjoyed all of it.
Those were at various levels as well, where some were only Trekkie jokes and some were things a casual fan will get. And some were just things that I think everyone would get. So they're trying to hit different audiences, I think, with different types of humor.
Yeah.
But as fans, we're getting, you know, we're getting extra jokes.
Yes, which makes sense.
There's things that are probably only funny to us, like how the ship has just so much ops.
Yeah.
I love that.
Ops, more ops. Yeah, and lots. And listen, near the at the very end, they packed in a whole bunch of references to past Star Trek things. And yeah, I thought it was very well done and well chosen. And just it's a nice sort of affectionate gift to Star Trek fans.
That final bit where the episode wraps up really nicely at the end, everyone's bonding, everyone's sharing.
And they're going lower decks, lower decks, lower decks.
Right. It's a bit meta, and I loved Mariner telling Boimler that he's her Chadich.
Yes.
Right. I mean, such a great deep cut for Next Generation. And they aren't afraid to make references like that where, you know, a lot of people aren't gonna get it. And that was great. And then she just starts rattling off Star Trek references.
Yeah, we had like Spock coming back from the dead and the Genesis and space whales and Sulu with a sword and Gary Mitchell and Deanna Troi's costumes. I mean, she hit a lot.
In like 15 seconds, she got all that.
Yes.
I mean, it was a fire hose of Star Trek references. It was a meta moment. They were kind of, you know, winking to the fans like, we get it. We're fans.
Yeah. Yep.
We love Star Trek as much as you do. So on that level, it worked. On the other level, I'm like, pump the brakes, Mike. let's spread out those Star Trek references. But I see why they did it in the series premiere. But I don't want to see that every episode.
I mean, I feel like there's so much for them to draw on that I'm not worried that they'll run out. And I had no objection to it. I just purely enjoyed it.
Now, this is actually one of the things I talked about with Mike McMahon, who's the creator of the show and wrote this episode. We discussed how they're approaching inserting jokes into the show and how deep they want to go. And let's take a listen to what he had to say.
There's some jokes that I found were so rapid fire. Are you guys just amusing yourselves or am I reading? Like there was a moment in episode one where a Vulcan, you know, covered in you know, the zombie fluid or whatever looks like Spock from Mirror Mirror, but it was so fast. Like, was that a real joke or am I just reading too much into it?
I would say that we are designing the episodes to be rewatched. Like, I love when I watch an episode of something and I really like it because the story is fun and the jokes are fun, but then every time I watch it, you're finding something new. So it's kind of not my job to police all the little things that we hide in there, nor are we trying to create something that, like, you know, is hard to watch once because you feel overwhelmed, but we want it to feel rich and we want it to feel, and we are having fun when we're making it. So yeah, we do put a lot of jokes in there and I'm ready to enjoy watching as people pick it apart and find little favorite things that people haven't noticed. There's actually something in the clip we released of Boimler in the closet in the beginning of the first episode there's something in that closet nobody has pointed out yet. I think only John Ben Sitters has noticed it. So I'm excited to see people find that stuff.
So, of course, you know, we had to go try and find that one thing that John Van Sitters found. Tony, just tell everyone who John Van Sitters is.
Well, he's a vice president of CBS Consumer Products. Every show works very closely with John. He met with Mike years ago going through the Star Trek archives. You know, he knows everything about Star Trek.
He's very immersed in all things Star Trek. So he is definitely the guy who's going to spot it. But of course, we had to go find it. And Tony, I think you're the one who did, right?
Right. We were staring at the closet and we're looking at the numbers and we're trying to think, 12-12, does that mean anything? You know, and there was a whole roundabout thing about, because there was a number reference in the show. The number 79 shows up a couple times, and we think that's a reference to 79 episodes of the original series.
Yes.
So number references are common in Star Trek. But then I changed the brightness, and I'm like, oh, I think leaning up against the wall of that closet was Nomad.
Yes, and that so and Nomad is one of my favorite characters. I have a tiny little Nomad on my desk. I love Nomad. That is a great deep cut, and he's hard to recognize. You have to know what the patterns look like on his weirdly shaped body,
right? Because it's not that you don't see the whole Nomad, and I was like 99% sure, but I checked and Mike confirmed. Yes, that's the joke. It's Nomad. That's an example of a level of joke where they found it funny and, you know, they are putting these things in. And yeah, the show is worth a second watch. I've watched it a few times and you notice little things here and there.
Yeah. And I think creating a show that you can watch over and over because it's so rich is great also because of the different levels of fans. Like I have a husband and son who aren't really Star Trek fans, but are familiar with it. And they're once we get our power back, very excited about watching the first episode with me. And then for me, it'll be a whole new experience watching it with them to see how they react. And also being able to catch some more of the deep cut stuff because I'm already familiar now with all the characters and stories.
But you know, this isn't just a Star Trek comedy. And this isn't just an adult animated comedy. And a lot of fans coming to this, and Mike, you know, Mike is from Rick and Morty. This is going to be like that. And it's going to be very adult and gross and, you know, all that edgy stuff. And the big surprise for me for Lower Decks is that in a lot of ways, it feels like a traditional sitcom. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I love sitcoms and this feels like both a workplace sitcom and, surprisingly, a family sitcom.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of everything.
It's heartwarming, right?
Yeah, no, it absolutely, yeah. It has, I don't know if I'd say heart, I would just say it has heart. It's rooted in having heart versus
right.
Crass comedy. It has a soul.
Everything kind of ties up well at the end in the way a sitcom should. Where people are learning lessons, right, as you do in a good family sitcom.
Yeah, no, and they're bonding and getting closer to each other. So, I think I really like where this is going.
I had a chance to talk with Mike about my view of the show as a family sitcom as well, and let's hear what he had to say about that.
This show feels kind of like a, don't take this the wrong way, a traditional family sitcom. I mean, it is literally, there is a literal family with the captain and Mariner. And, you know, is this a theme of the show? Is family a theme? Are you, you know, do you see it as a kind of family sitcom in a way?
You know, it's interesting because it sort of straddles the line. Sometimes it feels like a family sitcom. Sometimes it feels like a workplace comedy. To me, the way that I kind of distill that all into one focused area is the B stories from TNG. That the A stories from TNG always had the same sort of, you know, Star Trek exploratory mysterious tone, but the B stories got to be a bunch of different stuff. Sometimes it was workplace stuff. Sometimes it was family stuff. Sometimes it was romance and dating. You know, sometimes it was little mysteries. Sometimes it was comedy. And all I've tried to do is everything that you could do in a B story in TNG, I've tried to grow, and those are our A stories. And my favorite things about TNG were the elements of the crew feeling like a family, and that they were all working together, and that they were extremely good at what they did. So the Cerritos crew is the same. They're just not as functional of a family.
And you know what? I think they're already doing that really well. I think he's done exactly what he described in the first episode, and from what I've seen of a couple of future episodes, the same there too. It's a good choice.
Right. And I think for everyone who was a little wary about what this show is, the funny thing is, in many ways, Star Trek Lower Decks feels traditional. Not only traditional family sitcom, workplace sitcom, but traditional Star Trek, right? It conforms to the Next Generation era very well, down to the typeface, right? It's episodic, right? In that everything wraps up neatly at the end.
Yeah, I agree completely. And listen, I'm one of the people who is the most worried about the Rick and Morty credentials. I don't hate the show. I've seen it. It just doesn't grab me. And it may be because I feel like the heart isn't necessarily there so much in what I've seen. And here I have zero worries about this show. I just am fully enjoying it. I'm in.
For all the new Star Trek universe, if we look at everything we have seen from the Star Trek universe, this is the third show, unless you're counting Short Treks as a separate show. But the other two main shows, Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard, are highly serialized. They are darker, more complicated. And so they're doing what they can to fit into cinematic peak TV using Star Trek. And so in a way, this may be, ironically, the most traditional Star Trek show of the bunch so far.
I think it is. I think it's very traditional. And I think it's also going to lead people back to rewatching Next Generation and the other shows of that era.
It ties in with them nicely.
Yeah.
And that pretty much covers it for our review of Second Contact, the first episode of Star Trek Lower Decks. But there's a little bit extra at the end. If you stay to the end, you get a little bonus.
They had some kind of a season preview with more clips in it.
It was just chock full of humor and action and some pretty interesting things if you paused it, because a lot of it was coming really fast. But we can see an alien like A-Rex from Star Trek, the original series.
From animated series, right?
Sorry, from Star Trek, the animated series, right? If you remember A-Rex, he was the kind of tripod creature.
With a big head, with an ET-like head.
Right. We can see something that looks a lot like the space jellyfish from Encounter at Farpoint. A Klingon shows up, our first good look at a Klingon, and he's got a bolted-on eye patch. There's some kind of tribunal scene we could see that is reminiscent of the, you know, Kirk and Bones trial in Star Trek VI, although it's not Klingons, it's some other alien race. But there's definitely the same kind of vibe going on where our four ensigns seem to be possibly on trial or something. So there's definitely a lot to look forward to in season one. I mean, we've seen a couple episodes of season one, and now we've seen these previews, and I can't be more excited about Star Trek Lower Decks.
Yeah, I have to agree, especially because I was nervous about it. I know you weren't, but I was. But I'm very excited about it, and I have no worries about it, and I just want to sit back and be entertained and suck it all up. Like a giant spider.
Oh, God. And just get covered in that, the goo goodness of Star Trek Lower Decks.
And the slime that's going to save the whole ship. Yes.
Exactly.
The pink slime.
Next week, the episode drops on Thursday. Our review will be on Friday. And every Friday after that, every episode of Star Trek Lower Decks, look for a new episode of All Access Star Trek.
And then in between, when we have them, we will be putting out supplemental episodes with interviews like the one with Mike McMahon or David Benjamin Tomlinson.
And every week as we end the show, we are also going to be talking about a favorite Star Trek tidbit of the week, maybe a fun fact or recommendation, just something from that week that caught our interest. And this week, Laura, you have one you want to talk about.
I do. So a lot of people, they might not know about this podcast. So there's a podcast called The Delta Flyers that is hosted by Garrett Wong and Robert Duncan McNeil from Voyager. And they're going through every episode of Voyager chronologically. And I've been enjoying the podcast a lot. And I hear them. There's a lot of growth, I think, from week to week with the two of them in terms of what they talk about. And Robbie has a director's perspective on everything, which I also find interesting. So they did an episode maybe 2 weeks ago now, but it was about the episode Faces, where B'Elanna was split by a Vidian into the human and the Klingon versions of herself. And so the guest star on that was Brian Markison, and he's done Deep Space Nine, Next Generation. He's one of those actors that they just kept reusing. But he played Durst and the Vidian who does those things to B'Elanna in this episode. And they had him on for the whole one. And I found the episode, not only was it really fun because he and Robbie are good friends and have kind of a good rapport, and Garrett jumping in to ask them questions. He's such a good moderator kind of guy. But the topics that they covered in this one, for me as a Star Trek fan, really made me feel like I was seeing how that episode was made. And it was everything from the challenges that Roxanne Dawson had in playing the role and how she felt very vulnerable and she was very, very nervous about it. And they talk a lot about that. They talk a lot about the themes of the episode. They thought it was a really intense one, and the emotional investment of everybody involved. And then besides all the laughs and sort of the fun stories about things that went on, they even gave you little fun tidbits about like how the consoles that they're operating, all each control had the name of a production person on it so that they'd know which button to press sometimes. And I found the whole thing completely engaging, and it's probably my favorite episode of their podcast so far. So it's absolutely worth a listen.
It's a great podcast, and you know, hats off to these guys for doing it and committing to rewatch the entire series. A lot of people may not know, but actors don't tend to watch what they do, especially what they did decades ago. You know, and I just this week I talked to Anthony Montgomery from Star Trek Enterprise, and I said, "Is that something you can do?" And he's like, "No, no way." So. Really, you know, it's a great show, and I recommend it as well. So that's it for All Access Star Trek for our first full-sized episode. And we thank you all for tuning in. It's really important for us to get the show right, so please give us feedback on the website.
And we're going to just keep getting better as we go.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye.
We'll see you next week.